This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's Wild Oil of Oregano supports a variety of healthy benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, with a fireside chat of sorts for those of you who may be experiencing the extraordinary stress of this unprecedented crisis, COVID-19, lockdown, isolation, social distancing. They're all putting a big crimp in our lives. And for some people, they're causing high levels of stress and anxiety. It's unavoidable. With us today, Dr. Nando Pelosi. He's one of my colleagues here in the New York City community of health practitioners, a licensed clinical psychologist. He's on the board of advisors of the National Association of Cognitive Behavioral Therapists. He also writes frequent articles for Psychology Today. And by the way, Nando, where can people find your articles? I guess psychologytoday.com.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, psychologytoday.com. And there's also a therapy directory if people are looking for people to pursue in their location.
Great. Okay, so what precisely is CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy? Not CBD, because, yeah, that could relieve anxiety, but I'm talking CBT,
yeah,
as in Tom.
Right. That is a great question because, you know, if you want to learn to play guitar, sometimes you just need to learn three chords, and then you've got it. And I think CBT is kind of a fractal approach in that same regard. Mm-hmm. You can learn a little bit about it, and you can work on it on your own, and then you can consult a professional and zero in. And there are different CBT therapists now. I worked with Albert Ellis, who was one of the founders, really, of CBT.
The progenitor of this, yeah, right.
He actually came to my wedding and sang a couple, wow, of songs about the pitfalls of marriage, actually. But
that's special.
And I loved CBT because I wasn't interested in psychology per se. Well, I was interested in psychology, but not the standard Freudian stuff. That didn't really turn me on much. Mm-hmm. But when I heard the CBT approach, I said, this is a marriage of philosophy, mm-hmm, ancient wisdom, and also practical science, because we're able to use the scientific method on our own lives, you know, on our thinking, on our feeling, on our behavior. We can test what happens when we tell ourselves A versus B versus C, and what we believe is important. And so that opened up a whole world. I got very interested in understanding it. And in a nutshell, I can tell you what I do. Clients usually come in and they have an emotional issue or a behavioral issue they want to work on. And what I do is I say, well, let's look at how you think about this. And they say, wait, what? What do you mean? What are we doing?
Now,
and
they say, well, I'm telling you a story here. I mean, I've got a lot to tell you. I mean, let me tell you about how it was when I was a kid and my parents didn't treat me right and, you know, I was bullied, and it's like they want, yeah, a long, really long narrative. And it for some people, the image they have of psychology, they got from watching The Sopranos. And that, in some ways, is not a very good portrayal of what the potential of psychology is, because, as we know, Tony Soprano was a really messed up guy. And season after season after season, he kept seeing Dr. Melfi. And yeah. he obtained very, very little in the way of benefit and insights, but he kept seeing her, telling his story, sharing.
Yeah.
And it I think it kind of discouraged people about the potential for psychology because he ended up remaining a murderous, rage-filled person.
I loved the show, but I had to fast forward those Dr. Melfi scenes. I couldn't tolerate them.
Yeah.
But I have to say, that's exactly right. I think you've hit on the most important part of that is people get into the situation. You know, somebody will say, well, I'm telling you about my mother, why, you know, what she did, and why are you focusing on me and what I tell myself? But that's the key. So if you're going to learn the three chords on the cognitive therapy guitar, what I'd say is tune into not just what happens, but how you respond emotionally and what you're doing to mediate some of that. Now, within reason, you know, like I use the analogy of two people go into the water on the beach, and one person gets scared, jumps up and down, runs out screaming, they're crying. The other person is, you know, having a blast, they're mm-hmm. diving in, they're having fun. Obviously, it's the same wave mm-hmm. that they're dealing with. But
I sometimes use the singing in the rain analogy. You know, a lot of people go, oh, it's raining, oh my goodness. Oh. And other people, you know, like Gene Kelly, you know, just, you know, put on their dancing shoes and, you know, do a dance number in the pouring rain. It's a different approach to the same situation.
Also, John Lennon, when the rain comes, they run and hide their head. He yep. said they might as well be dead, which is a little extreme, but yep. That's John Lennon. Yeah, so, but here's the thing. So that opens up an entire lexicon of empowering things you can do. Now, that doesn't mean you don't want to change the circumstance. And I think that's the other error. I think some people go too far and they say, well, as long as I, you know, just tolerate everything, or I learn equanimity, or I learn passivity, that's not what we want either.
It's in a bad relationship, you know, a bad bad job situation, or a bad marital situation, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and sometimes people stay in bad relationships because they're emotionally disturbed, and they really don't know how to gain an empowering, self-directed approach. Now, I think some of that comes from specific beliefs. So what I do with clients is I tune into specific philosophies that they may have, and some of those could be historic, traditional. Some of these could be catastrophic thinking, you know, where, well, if I assert myself, then something horrible will happen, and then they're scared and they're paralyzed from pursuing a practical problem.
How is catastrophic thinking manifest in this COVID-19 pandemic? What are we seeing? I mean, I think we have examples of it from the press. You know, that millions of people are going to die. That it's inevitable that we're all going to catch it, we're going to be in a prolonged depression, et cetera, et cetera. And frankly, there is no form of catastrophic thinking that doesn't have its basis in some scintilla of true possibility, right?
Oh, correct. Yeah, that's why we want to distinguish real practical threats from emotional vulnerability, and the catastrophic thinking that I think is a problem is that we're unaware of it, that we're responding as though we're in a constant panic mm-hmm. about a lot of things. You know, it's like we have this particular threat now, and we know it. Mm-hmm. The paradox is interesting because I remember my wife telling someone that she was concerned, and this was in January, February, and the person was laughing it off and saying, come on, you're being crazy. Mm-hmm. And my wife was saying, no, this is a really potential, exponentially challenging thing that we better work on.
And she's also a professional psychologist, so she's a health practitioner, and she, you know, is attuned to these things.
Oh, yeah, she's the editor of Psychology Today, but it doesn't practice. But But now that person is almost panicking. So that's why the problem of extremes in and dichotomous thinking is that there's nothing to worry about. Let's sweep it under the rug, and then
it should not be binary. Oh my,
yes, right.
So our threat meter. So this is the challenge. Our threat meter needs to operate. We can't be in denial. We can't be oblivious. But our threat meter also doesn't have to be tuned up to an 11, to use an analogy from the movie Spinal Tap, right? You know, it's
right.
We need to kind of modulate our threat meter so that our threat meter doesn't paralyze us with incapacitating emotions.
Yes. There's a difference between music and noise. Mm-hmm. Noise constantly at 11, mm-hmm. but you want light and dark, you know, the Led Zeppelin approach, you soft and hard. That is what we want. We want something responsive. If you have a Ferrari and you're constantly driving at 200 miles an hour, that's not good. We want you to drive it very carefully under certain circumstances, mm-hmm. and then when you have a chance, then you have that responsiveness. We want the same thing from our emotional set. We want great responsiveness, precautionary responsiveness when it comes to threats that are abstract. And in this case, the issue was an abstract news story.
Well, there's such a range of possibilities because, you know, there have been instances where the authorities have been wrong. They've urged complacency in the face of mortal danger. And I'll give you an example. It's actually a personal example from my family history. My grandfather and my mother and my uncle and my grandmother were in Brussels, Belgium in 1940, when the Germans invaded Belgium. And when that happened, the government of Belgium and the military authority sent sound trucks around through Brussels saying, citizens of Belgium, be calm. The military situation is well in hand. We will repulse the German invaders. Please stay home and do not block the roads because the military needs them for transportation. All will be well. My grandfather, a prescient person and a Jew, said to the family, he said, we're getting the hell out of here.
Right.
And he had a car. He jumped into his Chevrolet, which was kind of an unusual thing for people to have in those days, American car. He was relatively prosperous. And he started driving. And every time he came to a roadblock, he said, he turned over, turned around, and he drove literally across the fields until he found refuge in France. And the rest is history. My family survived. That's why I'm here today. Precisely because he ignored these dilatory reassurances that everything was going to be okay. So, you know, you really have to fine-tune your threat sensors and be very selective. And, you know, on the one hand, you know, catastrophic thinking may turn out to be the path to survival. So I think that's really the trick under these circumstances.
That's brilliant, yes. And that's an inspiring story. And I think you're right that we want to distinguish the catastrophic thinking from the reaction. Now, if your reaction is passivity, then that's not
or
good.
Or paralysis, well, yeah.
Yes. We can have a precautionary delay, but, you know, if you sense danger, you know, as your ancestor did, then you can use your neocortex to override your mm-hmm. your animal and lizard brain.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the frontal brain versus the amygdala. I guess the amygdala is considered the fear center. There's some interplay going on there, and how do we manage that interplay? Because this is not something that we can suppress. This is the product of millions of years of exquisite evolution, and we carry it around with us.
Right. Yeah, and we don't want to suppress it. I think we want to handle it. And the analogy I use is fear of public speaking. You know, I'll often ask a client something like, "Well, what's the worst that can happen if you go up to this woman and you ask her for her phone number and she says get lost, or you do a public talk and you people boo, what's the worst that can happen? And they rationally, you know, at the neocortical level say, well, I see that there's nothing really mm-hmm. that bad that mm-hmm. happened, but my gut is crippled. I'm so scared. I'm feeling really upset. And even though I know, quote, rationally, that there's nothing to fear. So that is the challenge of therapy. It's understanding what you tell yourself, kind of putting words to that fear, and then by questioning it, by examining it, maybe collaborating with a professional mm-hmm. who can guide you, what you can do is start to navigate it. And mm-hmm. so then, you know, we'll have somebody who says, you know, I used to be afraid of public speaking, but now I love it. I do it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Do it, or you know, or
that would be me. I absolutely, I'd had mortal terror of speaking to a group of more than 8 people, and now you know I do these broadcasts and radio programs and talk to huge audiences, and I kind of get a rush out of it. I enjoy it.
Great, and I've benefited from your program for many years. So thank you. That's great.
Okay, folks. At this point, let's pause and allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share this vital message with you. Here goes. Are you looking to give your immune system a boost? This is Dr. Ronald Hoppen with a natural solution from Future Farm Botanicals, liquid wild oil of oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's wild oil of oregano supports a variety of health benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate wild oil of oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. Future Farm sources this product from the Mediterranean and produces it in the United States. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting this podcast and our sponsors. They're what make intelligent medicine a continuing free resource to you. And now back to our guest, psychologist Dr. Nando Pelosi. So what you're saying is we should look at our fears, but interrogate our fears for insights into how we react and understand that. I mean, the feeling's going to be there. It's not, we can't suppress it, but we can understand it. And in some ways, right. By understanding, we can diffuse the energy that uncontrolled fear accumulates.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, your situation is a good example. You were able to understand that you had goals, that, you know, your emotions weren't in line, and you worked towards your goals, and I assume that you changed the philosophy after a while. And so now, you don't feel the same responses that somebody who avoided would have.
Actually, they
would have
It's interesting. I think with regard to that, and I think you're also, to some extent, a public speaker in various venues, is you can actually harness that fear. And many actors claim to have had tremendous stage fright, and many performers, you know, some of the top vocal artists and instrumental artists say that they have this fear reaction before they go in front of an audience, but they kind of harness that to promote their the intensity of their performance. It actually is something that has a focusing effect on them rather than an incapacitating effect. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, some of the greatest. I mean, I've heard Helen Hayes, Lucille Ball. I think, I'm not sure if Red Skelton, I think a lot of people have said they, you know, every night was opening night jitters. Some of them got nausea. And I think they harnessed it and they've stayed, their performances were always lauded as fantastic and great. And I think that's a huge part of it is that they were able to harness that energy for a positive goal.
So, any final insights for people out there who are looking for inspiration in the face of this unprecedented challenge?
Yeah, I cut short my CBT lesson. I think I lost
Please, go
the
ahead.
Thread there.
Yeah.
Yes, the main thing I wanted to say there was that look for where you are the creator of your emotion. Take responsibility is what I say in general. Now, obviously, everybody is a little different, and everybody has their own particular weakness and strength. But I like to look at tuning into what you tell yourself about certain things, especially if you're having an emotional or a behavioral response to it that you know is self-defeating, or you know is not helping yourself or your family or your community. If you're doing something you don't want to do, or if you're not doing something you do want to do, tune into what you really believe about the world, about yourself, about others. And I think if you pin those things down, that will open up a world of aspects that you can start to tinker with and control gently. You don't have to go and slash everything. Some people go to the other extreme. You know, people who are very shy sometimes go to the other extreme and they become boorish and calloused. We don't want that. Mm-hmm. We want you to stay you, but to master some of those things that are unhelpful, and to retain emotions, even when they're strong and even when they're negative, that are helpful.
Indeed. Give us again the way that people can find out about the stuff you've written. One thing that I highly recommend to our audience, an article entitled Rethinking Catastrophic Thinking, When Overreaction Helps the Community, Even at Personal Cost. And that's
yeah.
a very thoughtful piece that, you know, we talked of, about some of the issues in that piece.
Yeah, my point there was that sometimes the things that is good for the group occasionally and temporarily can override what is good for us. So we don't like staying home. We don't like constantly washing our hands and showering and leaving our clothes outside. But those things have an aggregate effect. And they can help defeat the this current threat at the group level.
Yeah, I mean, in a way, we should behave like ants do when, you know, our colony is threatened. And it's an amazing thing. These are very primitive organisms, but there's an amazing amount of social cohesion. If, you know, there's a flood or if, you know, a sadistic kid, you know, stomps on the ant mound, the entire community rallies and to protect the integrity and survival of the community. It's you know part of our heritage biologically that we have this societal imperative, and I think that we're beautifully demonstrating this in the face of this crisis. Is that people are hanging together? There's you know not social disorder and chaos. I think there's some good signs that we'll weather this.
Yeah, that's correct, and I think that this common enemy affects us all, especially with its potential secondary effects. I mean, it's not just mortality, but it's also the morbidity. You don't want to feel chronically sick, and you don't want to tax the healthcare system and overrun it, and things like that. So there are secondary, tertiary effects on your immediate family and on your community and on the world at large.
Okay, so let's all be a little altruistic and help each other out to some extent by by remaining alone. That's kind of a paradox.
Yeah, like I said, I think. Physically alone, but socially interacting online. I think this, we're kind of blessed that we have the technology to be able to do it. Like you said, we don't have the Nokia phone now. We have other means.
Indeed. Well, and this communication is part of that. As we minister to our community of intelligent medicine listeners, we're providing hopefully helpful advice and comforting advice to get them through this. So thanks for being a part of that. Dr. Nanda Pelosi. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, Dr. Ron. Talk to you soon.
Take care, Nando. All the best to you and your family.
Yeah.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
You too.
This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman, As you know, this is a vital time to bolster our immune defenses. I've received countless requests for a specific list of supplements that I recommend to support immune health. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Immune Support Protocol, my supplement recommendations offering the greatest boost for your immune system when it's needed most. Best medicine is preventive medicine. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com for more information. drhoffmanstore.com. In addition to the immune support protocol, you'll find easy-to-follow links for our supplement starter kit, heart health protocol, and much more. These protocols are an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the intelligent medicine lifestyle. The same supplements I take for myself and prescribe for my patients. And for a limited time, you'll get free priority shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com.